Are you scouring the web for the best Black Friday and Cyber Monday deals? Stop it. Get Rakuten. Rakuten is a shopping sidekick that gets you cash back on gifts for everyone on your list. Right now, you can get up to 15% cash back at the stores you love. You can even stack cash back on top of the biggest sales of the year. That's savings on savings. It's more time shopping and less time searching. With Rakuten, you're always saving at your favorite stores on the things you're already buying. Cash back is automatically added to your account as you shop, and you can get paid with gift cards, PayPal, or check. Or eligible American Express card members can even choose to earn membership rewards points instead of cash back. It's truly a no-brainer. Now's the time to join. Up to 15% cash back ends on 12/2. Plus, new members will receive a welcome bonus after minimum qualifying purchases. Just go to Rakuten.com, download the app, or install the browser extension. That's Rakuten. Terms and conditions apply.
At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
Welcome back to the Just for Today podcast, where we dive deep into uncomfortable topics with no filters. My name's Adriana, and today I have a very special guest with me, my fiance, Kevin.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, boo.
Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself to us? Let us know what you want us to know and a little bit about your grief journey.
Hi.
Thus far.
I'm Kevin. I'm widowed, just like you. And
first of all, I want to say something because that just reminded me of something.
Oh, okay.
There was, do you remember that one person that got angry? Because I was like, I said you were also a widow, and they were like, isn't he a man? That's widower. Do you remember I said that?
I legitimately hate the word widower.
Oh my gosh.
I just say I'm widowed.
Yeah. I think I also said, yeah, he's also widowed. And they're like, isn't he a man? Like, he's a man. It should be widower.
Like, whoever thought of the term widower? It's so weird.
That person obviously wasn't a widow. I'm sorry for cutting you off. Okay. Continue.
It's okay. It's okay. So my wife, Nicolette, passed away in 2020, December of 2020, right before Christmas.
Week before, huh?
Yeah. Stupid.
So stupid.
That was a little over 4 years ago now. Mm-hmm. And life has certainly changed. Mm-hmm. And we're super happily married. We had two beautiful children. And we were about to have our third. She had just gotten pregnant. And we went to one of her OB appointments. And in that appointment, I think she was about 10 weeks or something like that. The doctor was like, this looks funky. I'm going to send you to a specialist. And I knew something was up. I mean, I work in healthcare. Yeah. I knew something was up. Because she's like, I'm going to send you a specialist today.
Yeah. You're like,
yeah, I'm like, dude, this isn't good. And she was like, okay, like, she thought it was like, in the moment, she was like, oh wow, that's really cool, you can get us in today. And in the background, I'm thinking, like,
that's not good.
Oh god, this is awful. You know,
did they tell her it was something wrong with her or the baby, or did they not say what was wrong
at that appointment? Her doctor had felt what she told us was a fibroid in her belly. And, but she wasn't sure.
So was this all from feeling or ultrasound?
She did an ultrasound. She did two ultrasounds, but, okay. She did an ultrasound, and you know, on the ultrasound, it's, you know, like, yeah, it's not very clear.
Yeah.
Especially when it's something larger.
Yeah.
It's really hard to differentiate the tissue.
Right.
Right. So you can't see the full picture. I think, you know, looking back on it, I think she knew she needed like a CT scan or MRI, which I'll get to in a minute. But so we go to this specialist. He does an hour long ultrasound, mm-hmm, with like a more fancy machine, basically. Mm-hmm. And he finds what he thinks are three masses in her belly. And it was one of those appointments where the doctor, after the ultrasound, he pulls you into his office. And at that point, I was like, oh, this is like really bad. Mm-hmm. You know, I've never been in this situation where a doctor actually pulls me into his private office to chat.
Yeah.
He's like, have a seat. And he goes over the results with us and he says, you know, I found this or that. And at this point, I don't know what it is, but it could be cancer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at the very least, it could be a fibroid or multiple. And, but we need to figure it out. So he's like, you need to go across the street to the emergency room and I'm going to call them and they're going to get you a bed. And so just head there right now. Mm-hmm. And obviously we're like, we have our two other kids.
Yeah.
My wife's name was Nicolette. She had taken the kids to her parents' house, mm-hmm. like right before this, mm-hmm. in between the two visits. And,
and how old are your kids at this point?
That time? Oh man, you're going to test my math skills here.
Yeah.
Holland, my oldest, was four and a half. Mm-hmm. Sloan was one.
Yeah. Sloan had just turned one, right? Because this was in March. So yep. Sloan was 11 months, about to be a year old.
Yep.
Her birthday's in April. Holland just turned five?
Yep.
Yep. I did test her.
Actually, just turned about six. To turn five.
Oh, just about to turn five.
About
okay.
to turn five.
So it was beginning of March.
Sloan's about to turn two, right?
Right, yes.
Did we get that right?
Yeah. So both of our math was wrong.
time frame of this is it's March of 2020. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine, like, stress is high already. Mm-hmm. Going into a doctor's office.
And this is the beginning of 2020.
Beginning of 2020. It was March.
But like the 11th. Beginning of the quarantine and all that stuff, because that happened the first week of March, right?
Yeah, and we were in LA, which...
Yeah.
In LA, we'll just, you know, say they took it very seriously.
It's very serious, and you were on lockdown.
We were on lockdown. Everybody was masked, mm-hmm. and... From that point forward, I'll get back to the story, but from that point forward, it just got worse for us.
Yeah.
With respect to like how COVID impacted her treatment. Mm-hmm. Anyway, fast forward, we go to the emergency room and they admit her into the ED and she gets a CT scan. Mm-hmm. She's in the emergency room for hours. Mm-hmm. I think we went in somewhere around 3 o'clock in the afternoon. She didn't get admitted to the hospital until around 4 a.m.
Dang.
I think. Yeah, it was in the middle of the night.
Yeah. So at this point, did she tell her parents or you tell yours?
They knew where we were.
Did they know why? Did they know the extent of it?
No.
Okay.
No, honestly, I've never asked them that question.
Yeah.
I'm sure they knew something serious was up.
Yeah.
And I believe we had told them in the car. We had called them, and I called them actually. I remember having the conversation with my mother-in-law, and I was in tears telling her that, you know, it seemed like the baby wasn't going to survive and
something's wrong. Yeah.
And they want us to go to the hospital, and it's kind of all a blur now, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
You know, looking back on it, there's so much like I understand better now.
Yeah.
But at the time, it was...
In the moment.
So fast. It was happening so fast. We just didn't know what to do. So we're just doing what our doctors told us to do. And so anyway, the doctor, after she was admitted, they didn't let me stay the night.
So you can't stay. Was it because of COVID or not?
Yeah, I couldn't stay because of COVID. Yeah.
So she's by herself. Okay.
I come back in the morning, and her OB that we had... been referred to, the new guy, I'll mm-hmm. call him, had just arrived. She was asleep.
What's the difference of you being there during the day and at night? Like, why couldn't you be there at night, but you could come back during the day?
I think the hospital at the time was just trying to figure out COVID.
Oh, okay.
I think they were just trying to figure out their precautions and limiting visitors and that sort of thing. Like, her family wasn't even there.
Yeah, no one could be in there.
Yeah.
Okay, so the new guy.
Yeah, the new guy's there. He was really great. Mm-hmm. He was awesome. And I'm, like, just about to, like, part the curtain. So she's in, if you imagine, it's kind of like an old-fashioned hospital room. Like, there's multiple beds, probably 20 beds in this room. Because the hospital's full of, like, sick COVID people.
Yeah.
So she's in one of these beds in so much pain.
Yeah.
And not knowing what really is going on at this point. Having a suspicion that she has cancer.
Yeah.
And overnight, like, the oncology team had seen her. And so obviously, like, when that happens, you're freaking out.
Yeah.
I'm freaking out.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a little bit better than she was because I'm like, oh, well, oncology doesn't just do cancer. Like, they get consulted in on every mass you can imagine.
Yeah.
Thinking, well, there's a possibility it's a cancer. But anyway, he looks at me and he's like, has anybody talked to you?
And you're with her in the room?
It's right before I'm about to walk in.
Okay.
Again, she's still asleep.
Uh-huh.
And just, I should add too, she's deaf.
Right.
But she does have a cochlear implant. So when that's on, she can hear. When it's off, she can't.
Can't hear anything. Okay.
So she sleeps totally deaf.
Yeah. She doesn't hear anything.
So she wasn't hearing anything that was happening.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, has anybody talked to you? And I said, no, I just got here. And he was like, she has cancer.
Just like that?
Just so in that matter of fact, she has cancer.
Did she know at this point?
No.
So you were the first person to know?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy that he just blurted it out like that.
Mm-hmm.
So then, what are you thinking?
I said, we've got to tell her. And he looked at me, as you want to do it right now? And I said, yeah. The nurse just happened to be standing right with me, or us, and she said, well, she just woke up. Just like that.
Oh, man.
Like, momentarily.
Yeah.
And so I opened the curtain. I said, hey, babe, you know.
Yeah.
How are you?
She said my hello. Hold it together.
She smiled and And then she saw the doctor. She basically was like, what do you know? You know, that sort of thing. And so he told her, he said, you have cancer. We don't know what kind it is. We have a specialist coming to talk to you. We don't know when she's going to be here, but it'll be today.
Mm-hmm.
And this was, you know, probably 9 o'clock in the morning, something like that. And the specialist did show up at like 4 or 5 p.m. And
so what felt like lifetimes.
Yeah, yeah. It felt awful.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
It felt awful.
I can only imagine.
But, I mean, I tried to keep her, you know, thinking positive the best that I could. We were texting and FaceTiming people. And
are you telling the people that you're calling and FaceTiming at this point, or...
You know, I don't really remember super clearly what we were saying. I do remember that after the specialist came, we had a big FaceTime call with her mom and dad.
Yeah.
And told them everything. And
yeah. That must have been so hard.
It was terrible.
Yeah.
So anyway, like 4 or 5 o'clock, the specialist comes. And she was a freaking rock star. She was so good. She was like, I idolize her. She's got the hardest job.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Being a doctor and almost all your patients die.
Yeah.
Like, I can't imagine.
Mm-mm.
Not the specialty I would ever want to go into if I were a doctor.
Definitely not.
Dermatology, here I come.
Yeah. Like,
right. Let's go.
No offense to any dermatologists.
Yeah. Or oncologists. Sorry. Anyway. Healthcare humor. Sorry. Yeah, so she comes and says, you have what I think is this cancer that is 98% curable, and we're pretty sure it's related to your pregnancy. And basically, it is a metastasized, you know, cancer in your placenta, and it causes your placenta to grow outside of the uterus and become like this giant tumor. And we're like, okay.
You know, so feeling positive.
Feeling a little bit positive at this point. 98%
curable.
Yep. I'll never forget that statistic.
Wow.
And so she kind of was like, okay, I have a little bit of hope.
Yeah.
So the plan at that point was, we're going to take the pregnancy out.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to continue to test your hormones to see if they drop. The name of the cancer that she thought she had was, it's called gestational trophoblastic disease.
Okay.
And with GTD, your pregnancy hormones continue to increase, like exponentially. It would look like you have triplets inside right. you with that much estrogen or whatever the hormone they're measuring is.
So HCG, they're thinking if they take the pregnancy away, then it would go down, like it'd get better.
Well, no. So with GTD, it would remain the same.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't get worse?
Like potentially once they take could. Okay. It could. But it should, your pregnancy hormones should remain the same, which would confirm the diagnosis.
Right.
They take it out. Okay. The next morning, so we immediately decide, yeah, go for it.
Yeah.
Like, let's get a diagnosis.
Yeah.
So they do the surgery. They take her pregnancy out. The baby at that point had already died. The fetus had it was not viable.
Yeah.
And
she's 10 weeks, you said, right? Around 10
weeks?
Yeah,
around 10 weeks.
Okay.
And we get to the next morning. They do more blood work. They come back later that day, and they're like...
We were wrong.
We were wrong, yeah. Whoops.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I've showed you this, but there's a video of the doctor. It was crazy, because during the video, she's, like, explaining how big the tumor was. And up till this point, we were still thinking it was three separate
ones.
Tumors.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or whatever it was.
Yeah.
It wasn't until that point that we actually were able to see that it was a large tumor going from her uterus all the way just past her belly button. It was huge. And she said that there were also spots on her liver at that time. So, because we knew that it wasn't GTD, they couldn't biopsy because they were afraid that she would bleed out.
Mm-hmm.
And so they decided that they would biopsy one of the spots on the liver. Okay. So they planned on doing that the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And when they took her in to do the biopsy, it was like a procedure where she's awake. I don't think there was any anesthesia other than at the point of where they insert the needle.
Mm-hmm.
And so they do a needle biopsy, and essentially they just move this needle up and down, back and
forth.
So
she's feeling it.
Oh, yeah. She felt the whole thing. And they're just getting a sample size of tissue from her liver.
Mm-hmm.
She came back, and I met her outside the room, and she was just in tears and in so much pain. And she told me straight up in the hallway, she's like, that was the worst pain I've ever felt in my life. Yeah, so she was crying and came back in the room, and we got her to sleep. You know, we were able to get her to sleep with some pain medicine and got her comfortable. I can't remember if it was that night or it was probably the next day that they came back and they had some preliminary results from the biopsy. And they basically told us that what she had was a form of sarcoma.
Mm-hmm.
Which is in and of itself is a very rare form of cancer. But what we found out later, about a month later, we found out that she had what was called endometrial stromal sarcoma and had a very unique and rare gene mutation. The doctor was like, she's like the 18th person ever to be diagnosed with this.
And it took 1 month to figure out exactly...
Like yeah, it was about that. Yeah, it was like a little over 3 weeks, probably.
So she's like the 18th person to have this.
Mm-hmm.
So then what are you thinking when they tell you that?
There's no research.
Yeah.
I work in academic medicine. I know how this works.
Yeah.
So, yeah, immediately I'm like, there's going to be no research to guide her treatment plan. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
So her oncologist at the time... She was basically like, I can't treat this. I have to give you to a sarcoma specialist. This is non-operable. You're stage 4. And she's going to die. That's ultimately what I'm thinking. I knew from the beginning.
Yeah.
From the second we heard that she had sarcoma.
Yeah.
I knew she was going to die.
Yeah.
Obviously, I didn't know when.
Yeah. So what did they tell you? Did they give you any type of time frame or
no? No, they didn't give us a time frame at that point. So what we did after that is she ended up getting discharged from the hospital. She went home. Then we started chemo. The idea of chemo is to shrink the tumor to stop the growth and hopefully reduce the size. Mm-hmm. So they started her on like a standard sarcoma regimen. She did, over the course of her chemo, she did, I can't remember the exact number, but like 36, 37 rounds of chemo in the span of about 8 months. Pretty hectic, pretty fast.
You did initially think that she had more time than she actually had, right? Like they did give you a little bit.
Yeah, ultimately what we chose to do and what I would advise anybody with a cancer diagnosis to do is to get second and third and fourth and fifth opinions.
Yeah.
You know, get as many doctor's eyes on this case as you possibly can.
Yeah.
So we went to a specialist in this particular type of cancer who was in New York, and she talked to us, and I remember at one point during that visit, the doctor had reviewed all of her information, and she was very sweet, but she was, you could tell just by her tone of voice, like it was the, you're gonna die.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
You know, and at one point Nicolette looked at her and was like, she's like, how much time do I have? And she looks at her and says, oh, sweetie, you don't want to know that.
What does that even mean?
Yeah. Well, what it means is you don't have much time.
Did she say anything else?
Yeah, Nick responded and was like, yes, I do.
Yeah, I do want to know.
And she said, "You low single-digit years.
Low single-digit years, but she didn't even make it to a year. Because she got diagnosed in March and she died in December. Yep. So she was you guys were expecting more time.
Absolutely. A lot more. We could kind of see that things weren't going well. We never got any good news.
Yeah.
I remember at one point we had a scan that showed no growth. That was like
the best
news we ever got.
Yeah.
You know, it was like,
yeah,
that was as close as we got to good news.
Yeah.
She was a trooper through the whole thing. She really was. She was so positive. She tried her best, you know, and in the end of her life, her health really took a downturn, you know, only really in the last maybe 2 to 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. She had had a hospitalization. There was a notable difference from the time from when she went into the hospital to when she came out and I picked her up. Mm-hmm. She came out. I was shocked. I remember thinking like, oh, she's in a wheelchair.
Yeah. I was and surprised. How long was she in there for?
A week.
Okay.
Yeah, she'd been there for about a week, and her legs were swollen. She couldn't walk. She was in a wheelchair. She just looked pale. Her eyes were kind of sunken. Mm-hmm. And yeah, she didn't look like herself.
Yeah.
You know, that was the point at which I could see like things started to turn.
Yeah.
That was the first week of December. So it was about a week before she died.
Yeah. So 2 weeks after that, she...
Yep. So she had come out of the hospital, sadly. She forced her way out because our daughter was in kindergarten and her school was allowing kids to come back to school for the first time that year. So
Mom wanted to be there.
Mom wanted to be there for her first day of kindergarten.
And she was, right?
Yeah, she was. She was there. We got her into the car. We took Holland to school. She couldn't get out of the car. So we took a picture of her through the window. I remember thinking like, oh, we should take a picture.
Yeah.
And so I picked Holland up and I leaned over the door of the car and she kind of leaned her head out the window. And well, you've seen the picture.
Yeah.
That was the last time she ever took a kid to school.
She
was pretty much bedridden the rest of the time.
Yeah.
She could maybe move around a little bit, depending on how strong she felt. Mm-hmm. But she never left the house really after that.
Yeah.
She'd have a physical therapist come over, but I think that only happened once or twice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very, very fast when it happened. And we were all a little bit shocked.
Yeah.
At the speed in which it happened.
Yeah. So she gets diagnosed in March, and the girls are 5 and 2. Mm-hmm. About to be 5 and 2.
Yeah.
How do you remember how you told them? Do you remember that conversation?
Or? How we told them she had cancer?
Yeah.
It was a gradual type of thing. Mm-hmm. We kind of started off with mom's sick, so she's going to the doctor to get treatment. They're so young at that point, like they don't know what cancer is or how serious it is. So it was really hard to be like, to know what to say.
Yeah.
Really hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ultimately over time, over months, Nick and I would talk to them about what cancer is, and her body started to change.
Yeah.
She lost her hair through the chemo treatments, and they would ask about that and why. And so we would tell them, you know, this is a side effect of the medicine that mommy's taking, and it causes your hair to fall out. And over time, like her tummy would get bigger. She, by the end of her life, she looked like she was like pregnant with twins.
Yeah.
She was big.
Yeah.
You know, and that was all the, not just the tumor, but the tumor produces fluid and the fluid is retained and you just start to get big, and she'd have to go in and have the fluid drained over time. We tried to talk to him.
Did you ever have like a conversation of like, you know, like she's gonna die from this or not really? Because I know they're so young, I don't really know if they would have even understood.
Not really.
Yeah.
No. No, I mean, we've talked to them about death,
mm-hmm.
but no, we didn't have that like point blank conversation with them.
Yeah.
To say like, mommy's going to die from this.
Yeah. So afterwards, after Nicolette dies, she dies at the hospital, correct?
Yep. She's in the ICU.
So she goes back to the hospital the night before, or a couple, was she in there for a while?
She was in there for like 3.5 days.
Like she was doing fine, you said, and then all of a sudden she kind of just had trouble breathing?
I mean, I wouldn't say she was doing fine.
Well,
but
not like
she's
going to die.
So she was at home.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, we were at home. Her mom was there. Her sister was there. We just put the kids down to sleep a couple hours before. Yeah, it was cute. Like the kid, she was sitting in our room, and in our room at that house, we had a fireplace.
Mm-hmm.
So she was sitting in a chair next to the fireplace was on, trying to warm her up. Her mom was sitting with her, calming her down. She was very anxious.
Mm-hmm.
And funny enough, like when she got really anxious and her pain was really bad, we tried everything. Like she was on fentanyl patch, which that was uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know, and then she had all sorts of drugs that she took to take her pain away. We've had plenty of friends and family that have had cancer. So we're like, why don't we just try some gummies or something?
Yeah.
You know?
Try smoke some weed.
Smoke some weed, right? And she was not super comfortable with that. She'd never done that before.
Yeah.
And so I got her some like tincture and some gummies, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And so I gave her some, and this factors into like what happens later that night. But I think that helped a little bit to take the edge off of her anxiety at times.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, she was having a really hard time breathing that night.
Mm-hmm.
The fluid in her lungs was building up. And at this point in her disease, her cancer was really everywhere. It was in her lungs. It was all over her GI tract. And later we'd come to find out it was in her kidneys and causing kidney failure. And she was just in multi-organ failure already.
Yeah.
And so because she was having such a difficult time breathing, I took her pulse ox, so to measure her blood oxygen level,
mm-hmm.
and put that on her finger, and it was like 83 or something like that, really bad.
Yeah.
So immediately, you know, when you have cancer, generally speaking, like you have your doctor on speed dial.
Yeah.
It's not like just being sick and having to call like a call center.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And so I call her doctor. It's about 11 o'clock at night. And he answers. And I said, hey, it's Kevin. She's not doing good. Sorry. And so I told him what her blood oxygen level was, where her pulse ox was, and he's like, okay, you need to get her to the hospital. I said, well, what do I do? Do I call 911? Yeah, or do I take her to the local hospital?
Mm-hmm.
In the local hospital where we were, was part of the same system at the hospital as the hospital she was being treated at. But the hospital she was being treated at was about a half an hour away, because it was like the big, you know, the big hospital.
Yeah.
He's like, you have enough time. Put her in the car. Get her here as soon as you can.
And he was there.
He was on his way.
Okay.
And so he's like, I'm gonna call them right now, and I'm gonna have a bed.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, as soon as you get there, tell them who you are, and they'll get you in.
Yeah.
So sure enough, her mom, her sister, and I put her in the car. And this is a matter of like picking her up mm-hmm. and putting her in the car.
Mm-hmm.
And her mom and I speed away.
Yeah.
We're driving very fast down the 405 freeway in the middle of the night. Up to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And we get there, we walk into the emergency room, and they were waiting for us. You know, I said, this is Nicolette, she can't breathe. I remember saying that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like full-blown COVID at this point.
Yeah.
There are literally, like, hazmat zippers on the rooms. And the doctors are in, like, full protective equipment.
Yeah.
They evaluate her. And I remember at one point, the nurse is in there doing some work on his computer. And she's like, Kevin, don't forget to tell them that I took a bunch of marijuana tonight. She was high as a kite, right? And the nurse just looks at me, and obviously he has a mask on, but I can tell he's smiling. You can see in his eyes. And he turns to her and he says, don't worry, sweetie. Everyone with cancer is on marijuana. He's like, you're good.
That is so cute. Oh my gosh.
So, yeah, that night they removed over a liter of fluid from her lungs.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
So she had really retained a lot of water.
Yeah.
They decided to keep her and admit her. I remember as they were wheeling her out of the room, this is, again, like at 2 o'clock in the morning, she looked at me and she said, I love you. I said, I love you too. That was the last thing I ever heard her say.
Man.
Yeah.
That is not a good memory.
No, it was
good memory, but not a good one.
Yeah, it was pretty traumatic.
Yeah.
I tried to, you know, text her and stuff. And
yeah.
I think she responded once or twice. Obviously, it was late.
Yeah.
I went home.
Well, you have your kids home, right?
Like, yeah. You know? Well, fortunately, my sister-in-law, she's... I have... the most supportive family.
Yeah.
So she stayed with the kids.
Yeah.
When I woke up in the morning, you know, I texted her. I was like, hey, how you doing? Didn't hear anything.
Yeah.
And I had planned, like, I'm like, okay... this is one of like 300 hospitalizations. Right. Like, I'm
you're
good.
Not, you're
like,
not thinking this is the last one.
No, not at all.
Right.
Like, this has happened before.
Right.
We've gone to the hospital. She's gotten a.
Yeah.
You know.
Like, how many times does that happen? And then you do like the same thing that, you know, you see her getting rolled out. You say, I love you. You do this. You do that. You never think it's the last one.
And sadly, it's pretty routine.
Yeah. It's just sad. Like, you don't think about these things. Like, this isn't like everyday thoughts, obviously. Like, all these traumas we like keep deep in the back of our minds. And like, when we're thinking about death and our people dying, like, those aren't things that we think about daily, you know?
No, in fact, it's probably things we've put away.
Yeah.
So it's that like, we don't think about them all the time.
So when it just comes back up, it's like, ugh, God.
Yeah.
That's so stupid.
But it's also good. It's very healing to talk about it. Yeah,
definitely.
And I think she deserves to be talked about.
Yeah, I agree.
Even the way she died, I think, deserves to be talked about.
Yeah.
She used to joke and you know, people would say, like, oh, I've never heard of that type of cancer. And she would be like, yeah, because everybody dies from it.
for her dark humor.
Yeah.
So the next day comes along. Doesn't text you back.
Doesn't text me back. So
you start wondering. Usually like text you? Like she was.
I mean, yeah, she would usually respond.
Okay.
Eventually.
Yeah.
But I had plans that day. I was like, okay, I'll go run these errands on my way to the hospital. And then I'll spend the day at the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I usually did.
Yeah.
Like, even when she was in treatment, I'd be like, okay, I'll take you up to treatment. I'll sit with you and we'll go do things. You know, I was off work, so didn't have that to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, okay, I had to go pick up a package at our old apartment.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I'm going to run over there. I tried calling her room.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, okay, I'll just call the room. Didn't answer. And then I call the nurse's station. By the way, these are like pro tips for cancer people, for cancer supporter or cancer caretakers.
Let's hear it.
Always know the room number so you can call it directly because they're going to be asleep.
Yeah.
And some of them might be like drugged out of their minds.
Yeah.
Right. A lot of them are on morphine and they're just loopy.
Yeah.
And always get the number to the nurse's station. So you can talk to the charge nurse.
Perfect.
So that's what I did. I called the nurse's station.
Yeah.
And charge nurse answers the phone. I said, hey, I'm Kevin. My wife's Nicolette. She's in room blah, blah, blah. And she's not answering.
Yeah.
She didn't answer her cell phone, didn't answer the room phone. What's going on? And I remember her saying to me, she's like, oh, nobody's talked to you? And I was like, oh, fuck. I said, no, nobody's talked to me.
Yeah.
And then she said she's been transferred to ICU. She wasn't doing well overnight. So I'm like, okay. And then she gave me their phone number.
Mm-hmm.
And so I call them and I'm like, hi, I'm Kevin. I'm Nicolette's husband. And it was a charge nurse and he was...
I remember you talking to me about him.
Yeah. It was amazing.
Yeah.
It was amazing. And he calmed me down. He said that, you know, overnight she couldn't breathe. They tried everything to keep her out of the ICU.
Yeah.
But she kept decompensating. And they said the only option was to bring her up to ICU and to intubate.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, is she intubated already? And he said, we're working on it right now as we speak. The team's in there doing it right now. And I said, so when I get there, she won't be able to talk to me. And he said, well, she's still going to be pretty lucid when you get here. So I want you to be prepared for that.
Mm-hmm.
She'll be intubated, but she's going to be awake.
Yeah.
And I said, okay. Okay. So I got there. Get up to the ICU. And I'm approaching the room. And I can see there's 10 people in that room. Like, there's so many people, there's not enough room.
Yeah.
And they're kind of coming out the door.
Yeah.
So I walk up to the door. The charge nurse said, are you Kevin? And I was like, yeah. He said, why don't you wait here right now? We're just about done. And just a couple minutes later, I walk in. And I vividly remember crossing the threshold of the room, looking to my left and seeing her look at me.
Like, help me.
Kind of. And it was just this immediate relief, but also this immediate panic of like, I want to talk to you so much. I want to know what's going on.
Yeah.
And then I realized she didn't have her cochlear implant on. So she hadn't known.
The whole time
what was going on. So I immediately was like, where's her implant? Where is it? And so they found it, but...
So she literally doesn't even know what's happening, and they're doing all these things to her, and they're probably trying to explain what they're doing to her, and she has no freaking idea.
No.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
What?
You imagine the panic?
I cannot.
And so I put it on her, and I started talking to her, and I said, hey, you know, you're in the ICU... And I just was holding her hand. She was squeezing me. She was trying to talk a lot.
Yeah.
She was, you know, biting on the tube and trying to talk. And they told me, you know, it'll just be a a little while until she calms down with the meds that she was on. They were giving her some stuff to calm her down.
Mm-hmm.
And that eventually she would kind of be out unconscious.
Yeah.
And I said, well, her parents are almost here. Like, how long?
Yeah.
Is her parents?
Yeah. Oh, man.
I just couldn't imagine. I couldn't imagine, like,
yeah,
not being able to say goodbye to your daughter.
Yeah.
So it was at that point where I'm like, I know this is the end.
Yeah.
You can kind of read the writing on the wall, so to speak. And, you know, she was in there for a few days. She kind of never really improved.
Yeah.
Her organs continued to shut down. She stopped, like, producing urine and stuff like that when they knew she was in kidney failure and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. So, at one point, it was during her morning rounds. We were sitting in there, and the doctors basically were like, you need to make a decision.
And at this point, so it's COVID, right? Yeah. They have this crazy rule that, like, one person's allowed in the room.
Yeah.
How did that work? Did they allow her parents in? Did they, like, yeah, what, when it's to this point, what's happening?
Yeah. So they'd already been bending the rules. Like, okay. I said, that charge nurse who fortunately had, he worked like a dog, man.
Yeah.
That guy was there the whole time.
Yeah.
Very few hours did he go home and sleep, I think.
Yeah.
But he allowed us to have
more than one
person in the room at times.
Yeah.
But they allowed us to swap people, which was also against the rules.
Yeah.
So the rules at the time were you have one visitor and one visitor only.
Yeah.
During visiting hours.
Yeah.
And they allowed us to have multiple visitors swapping in and out.
Yeah.
And the whole team up there was awesome. And I think they could tell, like, obviously she was 29,
yeah,
barely.
Just turned 29.
They knew she had children.
Yeah.
And they just knew this was, like, this wasn't,
yeah,
you know, no offense, but this wasn't a 90-year-old or 80-year-old, yeah, just on life support. This,
right,
was a mother of young children.
A daughter, a wife.
Fighting for her life, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I hope that they make those exceptions,
yeah,
in every circumstance like that. I really, yeah, do. But I'm grateful that they did for us.
Yeah, what
we
a
all
blessing.
Are.
That's...
Yeah, yeah.
Did the girls ever go to the hospital?
No.
No, okay. Was no. that because children weren't allowed, or was that your choice? Your choice.
It was my choice.
Okay.
I did not want them to see their mom that way.
Yeah.
I didn't want them to have that memory.
Yeah.
Actually, it wasn't until recently that Holland and I looked at photos of mom in the hospital.
At the hospital, yeah.
And that was hard for her.
Yeah.
It was really hard. I said this, you know, I had to explain the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't look like mom,
yeah,
anymore.
Yeah, because the cancer, you know, does things to your body.
Right.
I feel like that, I mean, to each their own, but I feel like that was a good call because, you know, they're 5 and 2, so they're already, unfortunately, not going to have so many memories of their mom.
Yeah.
And you don't want that to be the one that sticks.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't want them to have any memories of her being sick if,
yeah,
I could help it.
Yeah.
But unfortunately they do.
They're, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
they talk a lot still about mom not having hair.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. I'm, yeah, like,
and I mean, there's so many pictures of her, and, like, I mean,
yeah,
Sloan was so little, so,
yeah,
yeah, after she didn't have her hair and all this stuff, like...
It's like the majority of Sloan's life.
Is that, yeah. So you can't, yeah, avoid it.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there was a point where the doctors kind of told us we had to make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, I obviously didn't want to make that decision. I certainly didn't want to make it myself,
yeah,
but, like, alone.
Yeah.
And so we talked as a family, and I just knew it was, her body just was not working anymore.
Yeah.
And she didn't want to be a vegetable, you know,
yeah,
living on a ventilator.
Yeah.
Not that her body would last long on a ventilator regardless.
Mm.
It took about a day to think about, and we came back and said, we want to turn off her life support. And our family had had a kind of a traumatic experience doing that same thing with her grandpa, my mother-in-law's dad, where they took him off of life support and he kind of fought it.
Yeah.
For like 12 hours.
Oh my gosh.
So it was really hard on his children to see that, you know, and to deal with that. So I didn't want that. So I asked, I was like, how long do you think she's gonna struggle?
Yeah.
And they're like,
not long.
Yeah. Not long.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I had said a prayer before and I just felt like it would be quick.
Yeah.
And it was about 30 minutes once they took her off life support.
That is quick. Mm-hmm. So I get asked this all the time because, you know, Eric died of an accidental overdose, obviously, very suddenly. And people like always say, do you think it's easier that they die so unexpectedly like Eric? Like he went to work and he didn't come home. So like I had no idea, right? So is that easier than watching your wife, you know, die slowly? Yeah. Like, what do you think about that?
You know, I can't answer that any better than you can.
Right.
I really can't, because I don't know your side of it either.
Yeah.
Like, I've never lived through that.
Yeah.
But what I can say is that watching her die slowly was very, very, very hard on us.
Yeah.
And in the end, her death to me has always been very sudden.
Yeah.
You know, very sudden. Yeah. Even though...
You were expecting more. You're expecting more time. You're expecting,
Yeah.
And the downfall was quick.
As a widower, like, I've always... there's a part of me that's always kind of resonated with those who have lost a spouse in... or a loved one in a traumatic way.
Yeah.
You know, a car accident.
Yeah.
I've met several widow friends who lost their husbands in plane crashes. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that?
Yeah. Crazy.
Crazy.
Oh my gosh.
Crazy stuff.
I know. But I feel like, you know, like at the end of the day, we meet all these widows and widowers and they each have their own story. But at the end of the day, the pain is still there, you know, like I truly don't know. Like I do get asked that question so much, like all the time, like, oh, and I'll get comments like, oh, well, like, you're lucky it was like sudden. Like you're lucky it wasn't. And I'm like, am I though?
I don't think lucky is the word I would choose. Yeah,
I don't know if that's really what I'd say.
Yeah, I don't. There's no comparing the two. There really is no comparing the two. They're vastly different. But in the end, our people are dead.
Yeah.
And we end up in the same circumstance where we're having to put pieces back together and support children who don't get it.
Yeah.
And here we are. I'm 4 years down this road. You're going on 2 years, right? And our kids still don't get it.
No. They're so young. They
How often is it that like Jack sits at the kitchen table and he's like, I wish daddy was here.
Oh, like every
When's
day.
When's daddy coming home?
Every day.
You know, it's like he's four and he still doesn't understand what death is.
Yeah. Or like, so, I want to go to heaven and it's just crazy how, I think another thing too is like people don't realize unless you've actually lived through it, that when it's like happening to you, you're kind of like, it's kind of like an out of body experience. Like it's not like you're not fully there. You're not really like, I don't know how to explain it. Like it's just, you're traumatized. You're
I very much agree with that because it's funny that you said that. A lot of my memories, this is so weird now that I'm saying this out loud. A lot of my memories of the day she died were or are looking at myself from the lens of somebody else. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So, for example, I'm walking out of the hospital after she dies, And I think I was walking out with her parents.
Yeah.
They drove me home, my in-laws, and my perspective of this happening is of somebody from across the courtyard watching me walk out of the hospital. Mm-hmm. And I've never really thought anything of that until just now. But that's like, there's a million of those.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like same for me. Like there's, I only remember like, yeah, like my interactions with people. Like I can't really remember what I was thinking. Like, as I think about the morning that I woke up and I'm like, I knew something was wrong, but I literally didn't find out that he was dead until 2 PM. So what, like, how was that okay in my mind? 'Cause like now looking back at it, I'm like,
well,
how is that okay? Like I called the hotel so early and they didn't answer. So that's kind of like weird already, you know? And the only times I like actually remember is like when I was like talking to my mom or like when I finally did get a, you know, they finally did answer and all this stuff. And I'm like, what was I thinking in between and how did I get from, you know, one point to another? It just, and I feel like that's so common. Like it happens to everyone. You just kind of, I don't know, like your mind just shuts off.
Yeah. It compartmentalizes things.
Yeah.
Emotions.
Yeah. Okay. So how was it telling the girls? How did that go? What did you do? Did you tell them? Someone else tell them?
I felt like there was only one person on this planet that could tell them that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I told them. Her mom and dad drove us home. I remember getting out of the car and immediately just kind of fell to the ground on my neighbor's lawn. And I was just tired, so exhausted and overcome with emotion. And the whole ride home, I'm like, how am I going
to
do this?
Yeah. What am I supposed to say?
What am I supposed to say? I remember somebody told me, she's like, you don't have, it was, I think it was my mother-in-law. Said that you don't have to do this right now.
Yeah.
Which she's right. Like I didn't have to do it right then, but I felt like I needed to.
Yeah.
Like I couldn't hold on to that.
Yeah. I'll say that I feel like you made the right decision because when I found out that Eric died and I was still home that Sunday, I remember at one point, I mean, Emmy's so emotionally like there, she already knew it was happening and she came up to me and she was like, Mom, is Dad hurt? And I was like, oh no, like, why would you think that? He's okay. And it literally haunts me till this day.
Yeah.
Like I'm sitting here knowing that your dad's dead and you're asking me if he's hurt.
Yeah.
And I'm looking you in the eyes and telling you he's fine. Like, why would you say that?
Yeah.
You know, cause I didn't know what to say.
Yeah. Like, partially you just don't know what to
like,
say.
Like what am I supposed to say? So yeah, I feel like that was a smart move.
Like I'm coming into this with like having been in a caretaker's group and like had grief therapy with social workers from the hospital. And like, I knew like I had coaching
just
to like what to say to my kids.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to some extent, like I kind of knew what I needed to tell them, but it was incredibly hard.
Yeah. Having to do it is just another story.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, we went inside. Basically, her whole family was there, cousins and everyone. And I just got the kids right away, went into my bedroom. I sat the kids onto our bed. And her parents and my mom were there with me. And I just said that mommy wasn't coming home, that she had died. And what that means is that her body no longer works and that she can't be with us anymore. Immediately, my oldest, she looked at me and she said, but Daddy, who's going to take care of you? And I'll never forget that. You know, that's very much who she is.
Yeah.
That's how I told him.
And then Sloane's just kind of there, right? She's two.
She didn't really get
it. Two and a half. Yeah, that's like how Jax was. He kind of just like laughed at me and was like, all right, I'll see him tomorrow.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Okay. Yeah. She could tell that something serious was happening.
Yeah.
She wasn't that cavalier with it, but I think she, you know, we hugged, and then I remember Holland was like, can I go tell my cousins? Mm. She wanted to go outside and tell her cousins. Mm-hmm. And so then I was like, okay, yeah, like, go ahead.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Ugh. It's yucky. Just
yucky memories. Yeah, it sucks. Yeah. And it's those things that, like, we'll literally never forget that are engraved in our brain. Like, I feel like the look Emmy gave me when I said, Dad is dead, is, like, stuck in here.
Yeah. Forever. And again, that's another memory for me where my memory of that is of me standing over my mother-in-law's shoulder looking down at me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
because you're not, yeah, I don't know how to explain that. It's like so weird. You're not in your body. You're like really, you literally aren't. Just feel like,
no,
I really don't know how to explain that. It's just out of body experiences. Like you're doing all these things, but like really who is that? Cause it wasn't me. Mm-hmm. It was so weird.
Yeah.
Nick was buried.
Yep.
You had a funeral for her.
We did.
Did you let the girls see her body afterwards?
Yes.
Yes.
And yeah. So what we did was, her mom and her sisters went to the funeral home. We were very, very fortunate to be able to put a funeral together in short order, like in 3 days.
Yeah.
Because obviously you have to remember it was Christmas time.
Yep.
And
COVID. Christmas.
And COVID. So, funeral was very small. We were only allowed to have, I think, 40 people there, mm-hmm. which I was pissed about.
Yeah.
I was so mad. But that was, you know, those were the rules.
Yeah.
It is what it is. And her friends and the rest of our family were so freaking awesome. After the funeral, they lined the street for about a mile.
Yeah.
Down the road from the church that we had the funeral at, and signs, balloons, cheering, and we just sobbed the whole way.
Yeah.
The whole way.
Yeah.
It was really pretty special.
It's just so beautiful to see the village, you know?
Yeah. And she was so loved. That's why I was pissed.
Yeah.
I wasn't really pissed at the rules, but I was like, people deserve to be here.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many people in your corner and so many people that made us food and watched our kids.
Outside, right? Wasn't it outside or no?
Yeah, it was in a courtyard at the church.
So it's like, yeah. Your wife's pregnant in March and diagnosed with cancer. So you lose the baby.
Yes.
In March. In December, you lose your wife.
Yeah.
A few months later, or a few weeks after that, I mean, your dad dies. Do you feel like you weren't able to grieve certain things because of her death?
Yeah.
Yeah. And do you feel like it comes out now, like later on, now that you had time to grieve her? Like you always grieve her, obviously, but now that...
Yeah. Yeah, I do. It definitely comes out more.
Yeah.
And... You know, my dad was older. His death was, you know, more or less expected at some point.
Yeah.
My mom, you know, she had been taking care of my dad for years.
Yeah.
5 years or so. And he was bedridden as well and just was really not doing well. I hadn't seen him in a while because of what was going on in my life. And I didn't know that he was that bad.
Yeah.
And my mom just probably didn't have the heart to say anything.
Yeah. Because your wife's dying. She's bad. And it's like, you know, just throwing... I can't even imagine, like, as a mom.
I can't imagine being in her shoes.
Yeah.
Like,
that's horrible.
Trying to balance that.
Yeah.
Like, what do I... Do I say something? Do I not? Do
yeah.
I, you know, I can't imagine that.
Yeah.
So I can't fault her for that.
No,
at
definitely
all.
Not.
It's just, it is what it is. And she made the best decision she could at the time.
Yeah.
And it protected me from it so I could do what I needed to do. And I love her for that very much. And, she's loved me through the whole thing and, did the best she could while her husband was dying in front of her.
Yeah.
It was really hard.
Yeah.
It was really hard and definitely feel like Nick's death overcame his death, which wasn't fair to him, you know?
I've never like actually thought about it that way. Like, you know, your mom, ooh, I'm going to cry. Your mom sitting there trying to be like, cause thinking about it as parents, like you'd hate to see your child hurting. Right. So your mm-hmm. mom's sitting there already hurting cause you're going through this and your wife just died. But then she goes back home and her husband's dying too. And yeah, it's like
just
surrounded by death.
Mm-hmm.
And wow. Like that just gave me, I never thought about that.
That's horrible.
Yeah. That's freaking, ugh.
Yeah. She's an incredibly strong woman.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So looking back at those like first few days, weeks, and months of grief, like mm-hmm. looking back, is there any advice you'd give yourself in those early stages?
I would just say to, you know, just be attentive to your feelings and don't hide it. You know, there's plenty of people telling me like, oh, you know, ask for help. And I took help from people that I trusted, but I didn't ever really call a friend to be like, hey, can you like do my dishes?
Yeah.
You know, which like in that situation, you need people to do your dishes.
Yeah.
You need people to do your laundry. You need people to clean your house. You need people to take your kids to school. You need people to help them with homework. Like I can go on and on and on.
Yeah. That's the number one thing I tell people when I get people asking me all the time, what, like my friend's husband just died. What can I do? And I'm like, go wash her clothes.
Yeah.
Do her laundry, cook her dinner, make her dinner. So she just has to microwave. Like all these things we're not going to ask for, but we're not doing it.
Yeah.
Like we're not doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have to say this. One of the coolest things somebody did for me or for us mm-hmm. after Nick passed away was like right in the beginning. Our friend, you know who you are, made us a bunch of breakfast burritos, and there was like 20 of them.
Yeah.
And we froze them, and I could just pick and pick from that every day.
Yeah.
And that fed me for like a month.
Yeah. You know? Noted. Like if you know someone who needs something, breakfast burritos that you can freeze.
Solid.
Yeah.
Solid choice.
Yeah. I love that.
A little hot sauce.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Perfect. What is one thing about Nicolette that you carry with you every day?
Her humor.
Her humor.
Yeah. She was very quirky. Like I think because of being deaf, like had just a different sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
And, like her friends would tell you like, one of the funniest things about her was that you could be talking about anything and she would pop in and just randomly start talking about something different. Not because that was what she wanted to talk about, but because that's what she thought you were talking about. Right? Like, and it was hilarious. And the fact that she could like laugh at herself.
Yeah.
Cause she knew like, oh, like that's not what you're talking about.
Okay. Yeah.
but other than that, it was, you know, it's just her nature, the way she parented the kids and loved them. And I've always tried to give that to them as much as I can.
Yeah. I will say that obviously I never met her, but I feel like I have. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I just feel her presence around me all the time. And
Sames.
Yeah. I just know she was an amazing mom. I mean, the girls, I can't say remind me of her because like I said, I don't know her, I feel like, you know, we have two mini Nicolettes running around the house and it's
same just, with Eric.
Yeah.
Like I tell you this all the time. Yeah. Like I feel like we would be dudes, like we would be best friends.
Yeah.
And, sorry, Connor. So it's Eric's best friend.
His blood's boiling.
No, but I just feel like I can often feel like, Eric would approve of this.
Yeah.
Like Eric would dig this.
Yeah. Well, Eric and Nick, you know, like made this happen. So they approve. We'll get to that
eventually.
We'll get to that eventually. Yeah.
Ooh, teaser.
Okay. One last question for you. What does Just for Today mean to you in the context of grief and healing?
Whew. That's a loaded question. I would say just for today means a couple of things. I think it means, one, to live in the moment and just really embrace today, embrace what you're feeling, embrace your kids, embrace your life after losing the people closest to me. I think that it has forced me to view life differently and to appreciate life in a different way, and to really let go of the things that don't serve me. So
I love that.
Live just for today, you know?
Yeah. Should we get that tattooed?
Hell yeah.
Thank you for being here with me. Thank you for sharing Nick with all of us. I'm sure we will hear plenty more about her.
Are you going to invite me back?
I'll invite you back, yeah. Sweet. You can come back maybe next week.
Okay.
You have to come back because the people want to know how we met. The people have things they want to know. Ooh. So there's some stuff we got to talk about.
Got to chit-chat about.
Yeah.
All right, then.
All right, well, thanks for hanging out with us today. If this story resonated with you, please share it with someone who you think might need to hear it. And if you want to continue to be a part of these conversations, please like and subscribe.
Like and subscribe.
See you guys next time.
See you.
And don't forget, just for today, keep going.